Siskiyou County Board will convene an open session, and before we go to flag salute, can I have a report on close?
We went into closed session at 8:30, and came out at 9 o'clock. There's no reportable action. And there's actually a couple of urgency items at some point that I need to present to the board.
All right, with that, please, we're open. Lead us in flag salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Pastor Bradley.
All right. Father, we're grateful to be in this group here today. We thank you for the business that needs to be taken care of within the county and for those who faithfully serve, for the workers throughout the county who uphold the policies and serve the people. We truly are grateful for them as well. And even as we see a possibility of some rain, we're grateful for that. We need moisture in our county. God, thank you for a wonderful day. In Jesus' name, amen.
Wendy, roll call.
And we'll do roll call. Okay, Supervisor Chris.
President.
Supervisor, Kopseff.
Here.
Supervisor Haupt.
Here.
Supervisor Ogren.
Here.
And Supervisor Valenzuela.
Here.
Thank you.
And before we go to consent agenda, Council, we have some urgency items.
That's correct. After the posting of the agenda on April 15th, 2021, the Board of Supervisors meeting of April 20th, 2021, staff received information regarding an exposure item, that is exposure litigation, that requires direction from the board before the next regularly scheduled board meeting. Therefore, staff requests that the board determine by a two-thirds vote of the members present today that this urgency item pursuant to be determined an urgency item pursuant to Government Code Section 54954.2B2 and be added to the agenda.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, Supervisor Chris.
Aye.
Supervisor Kopseff.
Aye.
Supervisor Valenzuela.
Okay.
Supervisor Ogren.
Aye.
And Supervisor Howe.
Aye.
And real quick, I just need to make my announcement. The board will be convening today as the Siskiyou County Flood Control and Water Conservation District and County Service Areas number 3, 4, and 5 and receives no additional compensation.
Council, did you have another
item? Yeah, there's a second item, and that has to do with a conference with real estate negotiators pursuant to Government Code 54956.8, property description parcel on Foothill Drive, Guayrica, California, APN 053-651-820. And by the way, Wendy, I have all this written, so.
Cool, thank you.
Agency negotiator Angeles Davis for Siskiyou County, negotiating parties Elizabeth Matusmoto, M-A-T-S-U-M-O-T-O, Rural Communities Housing Development Corporation, looking for instructions to the negotiator. The negotiations and instructions that we're looking for the board concern the terms of any sale of said property. The basis for closed session is after the posting of the agenda on April 15, 2021. There was a meeting, a telephonic meeting, in which additional terms came to the attention of staff. And it's necessary that the board give direction regarding these additional terms that came to the staff's attention after posting the agenda prior to the next board meeting.
So moved.
Second.
And that's to add both of those to closed session, correct?
Correct. The first one's already been approved, so we're doing the second one. You're having to do with the property negotiation.
Thank you. Supervisor Chris.
Aye.
Supervisor Kopseff.
Aye.
Supervisor Valenzuela.
Sure.
Supervisor Ogren.
Aye.
And Supervisor Haupt.
Then I'm going to move to consent agenda. Is there any public comment on consent agenda before I proceed? If so, please raise your hand by pressing star 9 on your cell phone, or I'll take any comments from the audience.
This is public comment for our consent agenda only. Seeing none online.
All right. Action by the board.
Move to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
Okay. Supervisor Chris?
Aye.
Supervisor Cobbs?
Aye.
Supervisor Valenzuela?
Sure.
Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
And Supervisor Haupt?
Aye.
Thank you.
Okay. Item six, presentations from the public. This time slots for information from the public. No action or discussion will be conducted on matters presented at this time. You are allowed 3 minutes for your presentation. The chair may extend the time to 5 minutes for appropriate circumstances. Written comments can be presented if so desired by providing a minimum of 7 copies to the clerk. And when addressing the board, please state your name for the record prior to providing your comment. And please address the board as a whole through the chair. Comments should be limited to matters within the jurisdiction of this board. For public comment, now's the time to raise your hand by pressing *9 on your phone.
Seeing none.
Seeing none there. Any in the audience?
I've received no blue cards.
No blue cards. Okay. Moving on to item 7A, State Water Resources Control Board presentation. Is this a teleconference or does this...
They're calling you.
They're calling
you.
So.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Great, thank you. I don't know if there's video capability.
Sorry. Sorry about that, Eric. Go ahead again.
Great. Let's see. There. Hopefully folks can see me.
Yes.
Although it looks like my video may have just stopped, but that's okay. We have a PowerPoint, and if we can start that PowerPoint, I'll introduce myself and we can get started there.
Hold on, Eric. Just one moment while I pull up the PowerPoint.
Sure.
I apologize, it's taking a moment.
No worries. As it loads, I can probably do the introductory remarks. First off, I just want to say thank you for providing us the opportunity to come and speak before you today. We appreciate any opportunity we can to reach out and provide additional information on kind of things that we're doing and opportunities for collaboration and resources that might be available for some related water efficiency work and wildlife restoration we'll talk about shortly. My name is Eric Ekdahl. I'm the Deputy Director for the Division of Water Rights at the State Water Resources Control Board. And joining me today is Tina Bartlett, who's the Regional Manager for the Northern Region of the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. And we're jointly going to provide a little bit of background information and talk about kind of the ongoing dry conditions in all of California, but also specifically the Scott and the Shasta River, and just calling attention to opportunities that could occur this summer for water efficiency and keeping water in stream wherever possible. So we can go to the next slide, please. Just as a reminder, I'm sure we don't need to highlight this too much, but last year was extremely dry in the Scott River Valley and the watershed as a whole. The two lines on the graph that you're seeing, orange is average over about 79 years of record. The blue was what we actually observed, and note that it's at a logarithmic scale, so it doubles every so often, or increases by magnitude 10 rather. And the blue line shows that, you know, it was very, very dry all the way through about December of last year. And that dry condition contributed to a disconnect in the river that led to stranding of about 1,700 coho salmon at the junction of the Scott and the Klamath. And only because there's one little blip there you can see on the graph in kind of late November, early December, it did connect the river enough for those fish to migrate upstream. This year, conditions are as bad and potentially are going to be problematic as well. Next slide. The Water Board has a mandate to protect and balance all beneficial uses within a watershed. And in Siskiyou County and the Scott in general, those two of those resources, by no means all of them, is the importance of protecting and balancing the ranching and farming culture that has developed in the county over time, as well as the importance of fishery resources. And we have a number of funding opportunities that are currently in place that we wanted to highlight for participants today. And with that, I'll turn it over to my colleague, Tina, who can run through some of the opportunities available at the Department of Fish and Wildlife. Hopefully, Tina, you're there.
Hold on, just one moment. I have to unmute her.
Gotcha.
One second. And if she could just raise her hand.
Tina Bartlett. I'm the regional manager for the California Department of Fish and Wildlife's Northern Region. I am grateful to the board for accommodating us today to discuss this, what is likely a second consecutive critically dry water year. Just want to check in. Can everyone hear me okay?
Yes.
Great, thank you.
You got a good segment.
So, as Eric pointed out, we are experiencing some dry flow conditions. CDFW, other agencies, TREDS, and stakeholders are concerned with the recent pattern of several back-to-back critically dry water years resulting in disconnected flows in the main stem and tributaries, preventing some monitored migration at critical times. As Eric mentioned, in 2020, coho were significantly delayed in the canyon through December versus their normal migration timing, and conditions are expected to be similar to other consecutive drought years where streams are disconnected for in and out migration. We had a narrow miss for a complete loss of spawning cohort in 2020. Over the last several months, the department has compiled some audit migration spawning information for the last 10 years, kind of a retrospective look at in-stream flows and migration and spawning information. And we have seen, preliminary analysis suggests the Chinook population is declining, and more so in the Scott River as compared to the rest of the Klamath Basin. We realize that unlike other basins, surface water diversions are not scaled based on water year type to balance in-stream flow at critical times such as these when our Salmon populations are migrating. I will also add that low flow conditions are occurring in the Shasta as well, with river levels recently dropping below 30 CFS. The department's rotary screw trap will be unusable now versus operating through July 1st. Next slide, please. Thank you. Our agencies are considering a holistic suite of actions in the Scott River watershed. In the current year, we are encouraging voluntary agreements. We think it would be very helpful, and so we'll be discussing some funding opportunities available for that. We're also looking at everything, any non-ag diversions that are in the decree that might be monitored and identify potential efficiencies for future years. The department will be monitoring for and targeting any illegal cannabis cultivation, and will also monitor its existing 1600 agreements, 1707 dedications, and forbearances. And we are also dedicated to participating in the SGMA process with the county. I can't emphasize enough how much voluntary conservation matters. Voluntary actions by some diverters in the Scott River at the critical migration period in December last year made a significant contribution to reconnect the river flow, and will likely need them again. Individual partners and agencies have made significant investments to enhance stream habitat and build healthy ecosystems resilient to future threats for salmon, but our work is not over. Next slide, please. I want to highlight how the county might help. We welcome your feedback and ideas for solutions. Any assistance you are able to provide with encouraging parties to engage in voluntary agreements would be appreciated. We could use your help to get the word out about these funding opportunities for eligible projects. And we look forward to working cooperatively together to address any illegal diversions. We acknowledge the willingness of stakeholders to date to help when it matters, and appreciate the care for salmon. The community planning efforts are also important, and we should consider water management strategies that support freshwater ecosystems, provide community water security, and consider current and future impacts of warming climate. Next slide, please. Wanted to highlight several of the funding opportunities available. Proposition 1 is a key funding opportunity for stream flow enhancement in particular. WCP will have another Proposition 1 stream flow solicitation this July, with funding available for projects for next year. Next slide, please. We've compiled a list of potential project examples that would benefit flows in these streams, so that potential applicants will know what types of projects qualify for this funding. Next slide, please. Fisheries Restoration Grants Program is another funding source that may be used for water conservation measures. Fisheries Restoration Grant solicitation is currently closed for this year, but will be good and ready to have projects available for 2022 and beyond. The PSN for this grant program, on the fisheries restoration will be in the spring of 2022. Projects due in mid-April, and those projects would be approved in early winter and funded by the next year. That's good. Habitat enhancement and restoration program funding is available now. A non-competitive funding source with a simple application form for eligible projects. There's no solicitation period, and so if there's interest for pursuing this funding, we'll be happy to assist and connect eligible applicants to WCB. Types of projects are water conservation, temporary transfers, foregoing harvest and habitat restoration, just to name a few. And then we'll turn it back over to Eric.
Okay.
Hi, hopefully you can hear me now. You can go back one slide, or back maybe one more. There we go, thank you. So in kind of summing up, we really appreciate, again, the opportunity for us coming before you today and kind of highlighting these funding projects. And to reiterate what Tina said, highlight the potential successes of voluntary approaches and to really ask for local ranchers, farm owners, and landowners' assistance in efforts that we're likely going to need this year to conserve water and look at water efficiency and even aiming beyond that. You know, as we look forward, one of the things that has occurred in times past is we've gotten some questions about water use later in the year in September and October, diversions from the main stem or main stem tributaries for stock pond use. And I think, you know, under continued drought conditions and what now looks like the fifth dry year out of the last seven, we may start taking a closer look whether some of those diversions in September and October are reasonable under the constraints that are currently faced within the watershed, and whether the high rates of loss from online ditches and canals during that time of the year is wasteful or unreasonable. And that's an ongoing question. It won't be decided shortly, but we may start taking a closer look. And so with the funding opportunities that we've described here today, I want to draw the connection and note that, you know, as resources just become more constrained and challenged, not just in this watershed, but throughout the state during drought conditions, that there is a lot of funding available for projects that could look at increasing efficiency and addressing the ongoing water loss issues. And we just want to encourage folks to really consider those and look, and we want to make ourselves available as well. If there are questions, if there are comments, if there are stakeholder groups that we can talk to, we're more than happy to do so. And if there are questions about the funding sources, the contact information, if we go for one slide, is here. There's names usually associated with any of those, and then you also have both my name and Tina's, and we're always happy to kind of provide a more personal base to questions that might come up and can direct folks to the appropriate staff. And so with that, we'll see, Tina, if you have anything additional to add, but we wanted to say thank you and see if there are any questions from the board.
Tina?
There we go. Thank you. I don't have anything to add. I appreciate you giving us some time to talk with you today about these issues.
All right, I'll bring it back to the board. Who wants to start?
I'll go.
Sure.
I'll go. Eric, Assemblywoman Daly had a tour here Friday with regard to the out-of-control cannabis that's going out in Mount Shasta Vista. And I know that I understand that the Water Board was invited, but there wasn't any staff or presence there that I'm aware of. Can you expound upon that?
Yeah, we didn't get the invite until Thursday afternoon. So we didn't have the time or opportunity to kind of spin up and join on short notice. But I think in the future, if there are additional tours or invites, we very much would like to participate, and please loop us in as helpful or as early as possible so we can schedule accordingly. In terms of the groundwater use, that continues to be a really difficult subject given the board's authority over groundwater use. And it's a complicated topic, but at a very, very high level, the board doesn't have blanket authority to enforce on groundwater extractions. And you have to go through a number of additional findings to really get that point. We basically have to find it's a waste and unreasonable use. And that's not always an easy thing to do. You add on top of that that the board doesn't have its own enforcement staff and that we're leveraged through either local law enforcement or the Department of Fish and Wildlife. And there's actually very few authorities that we can leverage in that circumstance. That being said, as cultivation continues, I think there's opportunities at the local level, at the county level specifically, and I think we'd be happy to talk further about those, largely related to how well drilling could be potentially enforced or how potentially the county may be able to enforce unregulated or unpermitted or excessive groundwater extractions, and would be happy to set up a conversation to talk through that further.
So with regard to your authorities, it's our understanding that, well, one, you understand that Siskiyou County is a non-commercial cannabis county. You understand that?
Correct, yes.
During the tour, it came to our attention, and I'm trying to verify, I don't know if this is true or not, but I don't know if it's you, the water board or the regional water board that is issuing enrollment permits for cannabis up in the Hornbrook area. Is that correct? And
It wouldn't be the state board. If anything, it would be the regional board. But the regional boards shouldn't be issuing enrollment for non-permissive counties. And so if that is an ongoing or active question, please forward me that information and I'll reach out to our regional board colleagues to see if
we can track. Our understanding that 50 of those have been issued already and fees collected. So we need to verify that.
Yeah, please do, and please feel free to reach out and we'll bring in the right people. The state board doesn't issue cultivation permits. It could be CEFA, Food and Agriculture, the licensing entity for permissive grows. It could be the regional board. The state water board, at least the Division of Water Rights, only issues permits for surface water diversions. And my understanding is that there are, at least in that area, very few surface water diversions. It's mostly groundwater. And so it's very unlikely that the division would have issued any permit, but we'll circle back on our end and double check. You said it was the Hornbrook area?
Yeah, KRCE, I think it is. And then lastly, with regard to, drought conditions, understood, I get it. But what's the position of the water board with regard to, the county's been working in the Coalition of the Willing, with regard to, on the Scott side, Upper Mountain Lakes, on the Shasta side, additional water storage, and dedicated for fish flows. What is the possibility of support from the water board with regard to those projects, even financially?
I think we need to learn a little bit more about them, and I think right now we have a neutral position on them overall, but like any project in these watersheds where we can increase flow, I think we're interested in engaging in those discussions, at least to learn what they would entail, the details, and where they would go from where they currently are.
But you could agree that there's times during the year where water could be stored off-channel and used during these crunch times when the pressure is on all water users to provide fish flows, correct? That's not a
problem. I don't know enough about the watershed. My understanding is that that is the case. I've been told about some upper watershed off-storage reservoirs, as you noted. The devil's always in the details with all these things and the related environmental impact. Be robbing Peter to pay Paul, as the saying goes. But again, we'd like to learn more about them and see what the opportunities are and work with our colleagues at the Department of Fish and Wildlife to evaluate what the long-term impacts are and how it could be put forward to preserving the species.
So irrespective of the Upper Mountain Lakes, do you agree that additional water storage is part of the solution to drought conditions?
It could be. I will agree that it could be, but it depends where you're putting that storage and how it's being used and when it's being stored.
Thank you.
Supervisor Chris.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. In regards to the cannabis and the legal wanton waste of water on the illegal grows, the interest isn't just in anecdotal successes, but in major scale enforcement. Also interested in what other counties or what codes you may have. If you can share that with us, do you think you may need to adopt locally? Do you think there is any?
Could you repeat the question? It was a little bit difficult to hear towards the end.
No problem. If you could have a for the illegal cannabis, if you do have a copy of codes you think the county should adopt or practices you see somewhere else we need to do, if you can just send those to us, probably our county council or planning, that would be outstanding.
Yeah, we can follow up there. My follow-up question would be for non-permissive counties or also for permissive counties?
Probably for non-permissive now, since we're non-permissive.
Okay, we will do that, and we'll reach out with some additional information.
That sounds good. I don't know who the contact would be, Stephanie, or who the contact would be, but...
We can, we'll send it to Elizabeth Nielsen, and then Elizabeth, you could grab it from there and forward it to the appropriate staff.
That would be the pivot point.
That would be the best way to start.
No, thank you for that information, too. In regards to the economy, I know there was discussion about paying farmers for water that's not being used, but it also has to be recognized that the economic impact of every acre that comes out of production, that impacts the local community, and those sorts of the chain of dollar figures doesn't just affect that one rancher, but it's the hired people that work there, the skilled labor, the local town, the local community. It's a much wider economic impact than just the one single rancher or farmer.
No, that's very much appreciated, and something that I think we are very much trying to contemplate and think about as we move forward. And I think that's partly, the purpose of this meeting is to reach out and talk about issues exactly like that. Are there scenarios where, rather than taking land completely out of production, where we're paying to reduce a cutting, which wouldn't necessarily even stop the cutting, but maybe irrigation for a third cutting. Things like that that are targeted more to address this issue of loss of production and the kind of the related and intertwined economic activity that goes with it.
No, that sounds good. And then I think with the water storage, with the shortage of water that you're having on Shasta River, it shows the importance of a Dwinell Dam on Lake Shastina. Without it, there would be much less flows on the Shasta River now and in the future.
No, that's a great point. Thank you.
In regards to forest thinning on the slideshow, I like seeing that slide for forest thinning along with wet meadow restoration. Just to let you know, the Shasta River, as you probably know, the Shasta River is a spring-fed water source. So it's looking at the hillsides around it, the overgrown forest around it, up higher. An entity called ORCAL RC&D is working on projects along with the North Coast Resource Partnership. North Coast is very well respected, and ORCAL is locally on projects, maybe partners in regards to forest thinning and wet meadow restoration in the Shasta, Scott, and Klamath areas.
Great. No, that's encouraging to hear. And I don't know if you can speak any more about the grants or the funding for forest editing specifically, but it was called out on one of the slides, and I would encourage, again, local applicants wherever possible.
And then just bring up two for the two lake basin. One of their potential major sources of water is actually Modoc County, but it flows through Klamath County, Oregon, and that comes from Clear Lake. And any additional water storage for the Lost River Basin, and there's already been proposals for it. I know the state's been spending money on the Lost River water, trying to clean it up, and that would be a potential cost-saving effect with agriculture and fish benefits. I know I'm on another basin here, but that's, I just wanted to bring that up since I had your audience.
Thank you.
Good. I'm done.
Good morning. This is Supervisor Haupt. I took a deep breath when you started talking about stock water here and let others go first. I need to know where you're headed with stock water regulation on a number of fronts here. It's not like you can ask cattle to drink less water, and we don't have alternate sources for many of those operations because there's a moratorium on drilling ag wells, as you may or may not know, in Scott Valley. So I'm very curious as to where you think you're going with that.
I think that that's a great question. And in essence, anecdotally, we've received information that, you know, during September and October, there are diversions from the main stem or tributaries to the main stem on the order of 20, 30, 40 cubic feet per second per CFS to ultimately supply stock ponds at the rate of, you know, 1 or 0.1 CFS many miles away, leading to immense amounts of kind of efficiency loss in those conveyance systems as it's conveyed from the point of diversion to the stock pond itself. And these are occurring right during the time when connectivity throughout the entire watershed is probably most critical for migrating salmon species. And in general, we're interested in learning more about what the actual size and magnitude of the diversions are, where they're occurring, and, you know, in taking a look on whether or not that's a reasonable approach going forward. The moratorium on egg wells does add a little bit of a nuance to it, but are there opportunities to look at converting those stock ponds to localized point sources such as a well? Is the moratorium a county-driven moratorium? How does that come about? And just trying to factor in as many pieces of information as we can before we decide to move forward on any particular policy or position or enforcement action. So the first part is just learning more. I think there's things that diverters can be doing now. One is to take a close look at their existing diversion and reporting requirements, specifically measuring and metering under what was called SB 88 or Senate Bill 88, which was passed in 2015. It requires diverters to actually meter and measure and report that. We're finding statewide there's very poor compliance, including when we've looked at diverters in both the Scott and the Shasta, and reaching out, at least at first, under a more friendly, informal approach, and asking people to make sure that they're in compliance is going to help us get some of that necessary data. There's always enforcement if it comes to that, although we prefer not to have it from enforcement if we can. I know that's kind of a long, rambling response, but we need to start getting a better handle on when these diversions are occurring and what effect they do have on connectivity during that critical time period.
You brought up a couple things that I'd like to address. One, I think you're probably referring to the Farmer's Ditch or Scott Valley Irrigation Ditch, one of the two. So there is a debate there that needs to be settled, I think, between your department and the experts at UC Davis about the leakage on that ditch. There's been an ongoing debate for more than 20 years about lining that ditch versus letting it leak because of the benefits to the river, actually, of groundwater accretion, cold water late in the year. I can't settle that debate, but that needs to be done between the experts prior to moving forward with any kind of remedy. You know, truthfully, I think a lot of the managers of both of those ditches are poised to do anything, but they don't want to put the river in further jeopardy, not knowing what they're actually doing with some of the remedies. The other thing you bring up is a moratorium. You should be aware of that. That moratorium is a result of the ELF lawsuit against the irrigators in Scott Valley, that we were forced into some groundwater regulation, which was defined by the court, and the process is rather nebulous by the court, but I believe you were a participant, or your department was a participant in that lawsuit as supporting the plaintiff's claims. So I encourage you to take a look at that. I want to move on. A couple things. You know, my short tenure in Scott Valley, over 25 years now, is this ongoing debate about water storage. You know, this isn't a new idea. It came up when I first arrived here back in the 90s. We've been talking about it for years. It's time to get on with it. I'm tired of the debate, quite frankly. I need the funding. I need the horsepower of the agencies behind this to get it done. And the reason I say that is we recognized that the climate was changing back in the mid-90s and something had to be done. My ranchers and farmers in Scott Valley have hampered down as much as they can, for the most part. I will give you, there are some violators, but most of them have curtailed any kind of egregious water use that you might refer to. We've switched crops, we have crop rotation, we have buybacks from the water trust occurring in the valley. And here's a couple of facts. Since I've been back here in Scott Valley, the water use is considerably less than it was historically today. The problem is, and this is a historic fact too, we don't have input into the system like we did even 10 years ago. The climate's changing, the season is longer for the melting snow. The frost-free days are much longer than they were even a decade ago. The only remedy to this is water storage. And frankly, I'm tired of talking about it.
Agreed.
And I want to get on with this because the only thing I keep seeing is ratchet down ranching. They're at a breaking point. And maybe that's some people's agenda, but it's not mine. I fix things so that everybody can benefit from these things, and I'm ready to get on with it.
Thank you. You know, just a few quick thoughts. The ELF litigation, just a note that the board was actually a defendant in that, at least to start.
I'm talking about the end.
Yeah, and in the end, we did switch over to kind of almost a neutral type position. The question there was, you know, whether or not all groundwater wells need to be CEQA exempt. And the court's finding it is nebulous, but my understanding is that it doesn't say that all of them need CEQA, but some of them might. And so I think it's a question whether, you know, small wells on the order of a few gallons per minute might be outside of the CEQA requirements that may be needed for larger, high volume type wells. But that's a ongoing discussion. And it is, as you noted, legally nebulous in some respect. The question about ratcheting down and a breaking point, I 100% agree. And we're fully cognizant that you know, the funding opportunities before us today are really trying to address this issue that you cited, that conditions are changing. And, you know, we're in, again, you know, 5 years out of the last seven have been extremely dry. And that's going to put pressure on everybody, including the farmers, the ranchers, as well as the species, and trying to find any pathway forward, I think, is something that we're interested in engaging further. And so, you know, please let's engage. And if there are things that we can do on the storage question, you know, that hasn't come before the division yet. I have heard about it and there have been discussions, but at least on our end, we haven't seen permits, we haven't seen applications, and we haven't been engaged on that level of discussion. I don't know, Tina, if there have been correlative discussions at CDFW. You know, that's certainly going to help. In terms of the diversion and the question about the UC Davis rechargers and not researchers, rather, and what that means for the basin, it, you know, there is recharge that goes on through these leaky ditches and canals. I think the question that we're rapidly being faced with is, does it make more sense to keep 20, 30, 40, 50 CFS in the river as opposed to slowly attenuating that recharge over time for water that's then just diverted away in the long run? And my perspective at this point is that I think it's important that we keep that water as much as possible in the main stem of the river and the main stem tributaries.
I just have one other thing. I think you mentioned the third cutting of alfalfa. I want to draw a little bit of attention to that because that's the environmentalist dream, is to eliminate the third cutting. One of the reasons for that is the third cutting is where all the profit is for all the cuttings. And I draw your attention to review, if you haven't seen it, is our ag advisor about 10 years ago did a study in alfalfa and actually proved that three cuttings consumes less water than two in Scott Valley, particularly because of the fact that the irrigation that's put on the crop is actually less time with three cuttings because the amount of time the crop has to dry on the ground, and then it's not held as long in rotation as it is with two cuttings to get the maximum amount of foliage out of a second cutting. So if you don't have a copy of that, I could surely find somebody who does and get that to you.
I don't have a copy of that. I have read some other studies in the Scott and in Siskiyou County related to kind of productivity and what happens if you don't irrigate for the third cutting, which I think is a little bit different than saying, you know, let's not do a third cutting, and basically showing that crop efficiency by not irrigating during that time period reduces output by anywhere from 10 to 40%. You know, I'd be interested in seeing the water loss study that you referenced. I'll be honest, it's hard to wrap my head around how irrigating three times uses less water than irrigating two times. But, you know, evapotranspiration and other issues could be something to take a look at.
If you have any information on how I can grow a third cutting without irrigation in August, let me know.
I can refer you to the study that we read also.
What study was that?
I'll have to go back and find it. I can send it.
Yeah, send that to Elizabeth, please.
Please do. I will.
And real quickly, just a follow-up to that. Is the Water Board doing anything with regard to a study about that topic?
Currently, no.
Do you intend to?
At this point, it is not on our radar.
I'm going to yield the mic here and one more point. We need the help of all agencies with the groundwater extraction in Shasta Valley, and it because it's spreading to the rest of the county. I am quite serious that this is like a virus spreading through our county, consuming water at an enormous rate that is unregulated. And as such, I know right now there are interests out there that are eyeing properties in my valley as well. And Katie, bar the door when that starts to happen. It's just a warning and a prediction. We need help, and we're tired of being dismissed by the state agencies on this issue.
I Appreciate that comment. And I think one area that would be helpful and engaging is trying to understand better kind of what type of assistance the county would be needed. My understanding is that the county does have enforcement authority and does have the ability to directly intervene in these cannabis grows. That being said, you know, going in and doing a cannabis enforcement action is dangerous and needs a lot of support and a lot of assistance.
We want the same enforcement that you do to agriculture on those grows.
We do not enforce on agriculture anywhere close to how we enforce on cannabis. The board does not have enforcement staff, and it does not have law enforcement staff, does not have the ability to procure warrants. It is Fish and Wildlife, it is the county sheriff, it is the National Guard. The board is a kind of an adjunct or ancillary enforcement entity that enforces environmental regulations, but we don't have the ability to do law enforcement actions on the ground. The county does.
So but the county is nearly neutered with the authority we have. It takes the state authorities, because our ability to fine and do things are muted and capped at such a low value that we can't put a couple $1,000s up against millions and expect to be productive here. The other thing I will tell you, one thing that you could do is this county's had a better than 5-year emergency declaration in place on this very activity, and the governor refuses to recognize it. You could get behind that and support it as an agency. That would help tremendously and allow us to engage the entities you're talking about, like the National Guard and some of the state responsible agencies that could come in here and give us a hand with this.
I will relay that information, and on that point, we do agree that additional resources across all fronts will be helpful in addressing illegal and illicit cannabis cultivation. That the enforcement funding is, I think, needed. You know, the board was just required to cut 60 positions because of lack of funding for cannabis, and that has constrained our effort to go forward. I know other agencies have more robust enforcement staffing, and we can direct you to those entities. Tina may be able to as well through Fish and Wildlife.
Well, any help would be appreciated. Thank you. I'm going to ask if there are other board comments here. If not, I know the sheriff's waiting online to make a comment. You could find him.
Before we leave this topic, may I offer one more suggestion?
Sure.
There was mention of the off-channel water storage, and the Coalition of the Willing identifying that as a potentially viable project. I would like to suggest that we work together on a proposal for a feasibility study for that. And, Proposition 1 funding that would be appropriate for that type of an assessment.
Thank you. We can get that proposal to you, Tina.
Thank you.
It's fairly detailed and it's pretty well thought out. Sheriff LaRue.
Oh, yes, good morning. I just wanted to follow up, if I could, regarding the water board. Just to ask Eric and try to, just provide some information. So the concern is that, the county doesn't allow commercial cannabis of any magnitude. And my understanding is that an individual that has, greater than 2,000 square feet of disturbed area has to enroll with the water board to get a waste discharge permit. And since we don't allow commercial cannabis, our county would prohibit any of that, yet individuals are going to the water board and getting enrolled in the program. and there's no communication between the county and the state. So essentially, you know, that's an avenue to circumvent, you know, the felony issue of them, having unlawful waste discharge, because in a sense they're enrolling, but unlawfully. So I don't know if that helps clarify some of that, what Supervisor Kopseth was mentioning. So that's our concern, is that it shouldn't be allowed at all.
Thank you, and I agree. In fact, we've had a policy for some time that we would not be permitting grows in counties where it was non-permissive. And so, again, if people are actively going and getting those permits from the water board, please let us know if you have a specific example. On our end, we'll reach out directly to our regional water quality control board, who does the waste discharge permitting, and ask this question specifically and see if they've had anyone recently come in. And on our end, we'll commit to following up directly if we have, in fact, given out some permits and just figuring out what information we can and why those permits were given out.
I appreciate that. I know there's quite a few, and yeah, whatever process we can try to, you know, get rid of that would be much appreciated. That's all I have.
Okay. Supervisor Kopseth has another comment.
So, Ms. Bartlett, I just want to thank you. I know a lot of your staff from the Warden's End was out on the tour that day. They were cutting plants. You had several. I think there was probably six or eight out there. And so we have appreciated your agency and the help that you've provided in helping to eradicate that. Also, I would like, Ms. Bartlett, if you would comment with regard to the safe harbor agreements that are, I'll call it, still in flux, I think. I've heard that they've been signed, but it's the template. And now it's going to, I think, public comment in that. This is a voluntary effort by landowners, for those that don't know, and at their own expense to provide for the requirements of a safe harbor to help and provide solutions for what we're talking about with regard to water. How are those going, and are they done, or are they still kind of in flux?
Thank you, Supervisor Kopseth. Those proposals are signed by the landowners and by the federal agencies. The enhancement of survival permits, are authorized. The state, so any entity that wants to move forward with state authorization will have to apply for a consistency determination from the Department of Fish and Wildlife. And before they do that, we will need to make sure they have gone through a CEQA process for any properties that need a 1600 agreement. So those that don't need a 1600 agreement and already have, or may already have one, could now apply for a consistency determination. Other ones will have to wait until we complete the CEQA process, and we expect to do that in or start that process in May.
And how long would that process take?
I think we'll likely have a regular 30-day comment period, and so maybe 45 to 60 days.
So it's on the state side now, and can you explain the consistency process?
That's
a new one for me.
Okay, so we have the authority to make findings that a federal permit also meets the requirements of a state permit for a safe harbor agreement, and so that we would be finding making a finding on the federal permit that it is consistent.
Thank you.
OK.
I do know there's a lot of public interest and letters that have been received from interested stakeholders, the department, and the and NOAA Fisheries is planning on meeting with those stakeholders.
Letters of support?
No, letters of concern. And so we will be meeting with those stakeholders, listening to their comments, and that's it, and just, of course, to be open and transparent, and, you know, we'll see how we proceed from there.
Thank you. And can you notify, will those be public meetings, or will they just be with those concerned entities?
At this time, they're scheduled with those concerned entities.
Is that normal practice, or are they public?
They are not public at this time.
And why is that?
We received requests to meet directly with them, just to hear their concerns. We will not be making any decisions.
So the Cal Fish and Wildlife is a state agency is meeting privately with concerned individuals on these safe harbor agreements? Shouldn't it be public? Where's the transparency?
Well, I think we can evaluate whether or not we need to make it a broader forum.
I would appreciate that. I think the county would be interested in that because this has been a many years effort and at the cost of the landowners. And again, voluntarily coming forward saying, this is what we'd like to do, how do we do it? And I think the public should be involved. Now that it is public, it shouldn't just be, you know, those that may have letters of concern, because there may be those that may be supportive of it as well.
Yes, I agree. So I will make that suggestion to NOAA Fisheries.
Thank you.
All right, Eric and Tina. Tina, for your agency, you know, Michael and I have worked with your agency pretty much hand in glove the last 3 or 4 years on some pretty thorny issues. And, you know, we don't agree on everything, but I think we've been able to work through a lot of these together. I appreciate that. The anger coming from me is out of frustration today, and I will say that I'm not going to tone down my anger because I am angry. I am watching everybody sit by with their hands tied on this criminal extraction of water and water use without any good cards here at the county. I am slowly watching, and it's not slow anymore in the last couple of years, the environment that we cherish here be destroyed by black market, dope industry, and big money, with a spread of crime across this county that we have never experienced before. We are in crisis, and I would surely appreciate any effort you could put on the governor to recognize the crisis that we're experiencing here in Siskiyou County.
I will certainly express the urgency to our law enforcement division and director.
The thing to understand most is the magnitude of this is well beyond anything that the county has financially to respond in a very productive manner to curtail this activity. And I hate to say that in public, but those are the facts. Anyway, I appreciate your time today, and look forward on discussions on how to improve water storage and other things that we can actually work together on to improve our life's situation for our ag producers here in Siskiyou County.
Thank you.
Okay. You need a break, Wendy?
Let's go after the next one.
Okay. I'm going to move on to item 8A, public health. COVID presentation, I think. Yes.
Yes.
Confusing myself right now. And is there somebody
Good morning. Online? Can you hear me?
Yes. Good morning.
Good morning. This is Shelley Davis, Director of Public Health. I'm here to report on all things COVID. And probably need to start off with, as many of you know, we've seen a steady increase in the last week of positive cases here in Siskiyou County. We went from 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, to seeing only 2 to 5 a day. Now we're seeing 9 to 15 a day. So you're going to see that reflected on our stats on our webpage as well. But as of right now, we have a total confirmed amount of 1,959 positive cases from last year. Currently, we have 45 that are active positive cases, which leaves a total of 1,893 that recovered, and we have a total of 21 deaths. I'm sure many of you might have seen the little asterisks on the dashboard that refers to CDPH giving us a list of individuals that died in other counties that were originally from our county. And so now we have collected that data and put that in as well. Currently, we have 2 people that are hospitalized, one in the ICU, and over the COVID time frame, we have a cumulative hospitalization of 156 individuals. So with that said, I can move on to the vaccination efforts and recognize that we have administered in Siskiyou County 22,010 doses with a total of 9,457 residents who have completed the series, and they would be what we consider fully vaccinated, which gives us approximately 22% of our population with those series being completed, which is good. Those numbers are good. We'd like to see them up a little bit higher. So we are pushing out more efforts. We do have a mass vaccination clinic the first Thursday in Mount Shasta. We have the third Thursday in Wairika. And we have one more out in Tule Lake that Public Health will be going out to tomorrow. And tomorrow's our second dose vaccinations. So that's basically where we are. As far as locations of vaccinations, we're seeing a higher number of South County individuals that are vaccinated. They're around 43%. In North County, we see about 29%. Out in the West, 13%, and the Eastern County, 6%. And we recognize that we've got to give kudos to all those clinics down in the South County that took on vaccination efforts and are vaccinating as many people as they can as well, which gives them, you know, a little bit more advantage in the South County and why we're seeing the numbers down there compared to the North County. Not as many of our clinics have reached out to offer vaccinations, although our hospitals are doing a fantastic job doing that. So that's basically what I have, other than the fact that we are still in the orange tier. It concerns me with this positivity rate that is going up on what that looks like going forward in the next week or two. But at least we're still orange and not moving the other direction. Does anybody have any questions?
Supervisor Chris.
What's the vaccination rate for Eastern Siskiyou County? Do you know, or is it just north south right now?
The Eastern Siskiyou County is 6%.
6%, not 6, all right.
Yes.
Thank you.
Through the chair, I just want to say, Shelley, thank you for the opportunity to volunteer at last week's vaccination clinic. It was a pleasure, and you run a well-oiled machine.
Thank you, Supervisor Ogren. I appreciate it. We so appreciate you being there.
My pleasure.
Shelley, can you give us maybe a little bit of a breakdown of what part of the population we're seeing infected now? Is it younger or
no?
Maybe a snapshot of percentage of over 65 vaccinated now?
Yeah, so I can say, I can give you those, over 65, we have 52% vaccinated. And we've got to recognize too, that was the one that was opened up in the very beginning. So as of the 15th, it was open to everybody. And we've got, we get to see what that looks like, and that will come up in our next clinics, basically. So over 65 is 52%, between 50 and 64, it's 25%, and again, because of the young age, 18 to 49, only 23% of vaccinations. Your other question, can you rephrase what that was in regards to, and it had to do with?
I'm just trying to figure out what part of the population the increase is moving through right now.
It's random, really. It's not an actual number as far as age group, because it's random. It goes from young to definitely older.
Okay.
All I can say is we just got to keep pushing these vaccinations, because that's definitely going to help. It's going to help open us up a whole lot more too, because that's the new criteria that the state is following, is the percentage rate versus your vaccination rate. So public health is really, really pushing out vaccinations. I believe Jonathan reported off that we just purchased the new mobile clinic, and we'll be taking that out to what they call the HPI areas, which is the high poverty index areas, so that we can reach people that don't have the capability of getting in to say Wairika or to Mount Shasta. So we are definitely working on those areas and getting out there.
So I'm told that some of the hospitals are now reducing their testing days down to 2 a week. Is that true?
So some of them are. They have decreased down to like 3 days a week compared to every day of the week. Yes. They are also putting on large vaccination clinics at the same time. So they're also pushing out the vaccine as well. And they're doing very large clinics. And I also have to give a huge shout out to the Karuk and the Anav tribe, who are really pushing out those vaccines as well. They're doing a really good job of that.
Okay. Any idea when the Johnson & Johnson will come back online?
No idea. They haven't really said.
Okay. I think that's all from the board. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great day, guys.
All right. That will take a 5-minute recess.